I was nobody at the time on social media. So I started posting there and I started making like 6, 7 to 8 grand a month. 4 months, I went from 0 to 400,000 followers.
Whoa.
And fourth month, I think I was making 20K.
Wow.
So a lot of times, if it doesn't flow like something I would normally say, it's because I'm usually using a keyword that I've been suggested to give. Dumpy. I use that on all my platforms because I don't like to say but. And when I say cake, the United States, specifically Utah, there are a lot of programs where people come in the middle of the night and kidnap you, take you out to the wilderness all day. You're doing it lucid dreaming through the night. You're journaling about the lucid dreaming in the morning. And when you go in, you're considered earth-based. So you can't talk to anybody and no one will talk to you for 3 days. I learned so much about myself and how the world works, how people work. I just am able to understand situations when I'm going through a hard time.
Thank you so much for doing this. I'm really excited to sort of have you on and talk about sort of social media, talk about how you sort of grew your account, how you sort of make it a full-time gig. So thank you for taking the time to do this, Rebecca.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I guess we'll jump straight into Rebecca. Like, how long have you been sort of doing social media?
I started at the end of 2021. So that would make it, or maybe it was 2020. It was after COVID. Oh, shoot. When was this? I think it was 2021, December or, oh no, September 2021 was when I first installed TikTok and I made my first TikTok. And that's when I was like, okay, I could probably do Instagram, Snapchat. And I used to have a YouTube channel when I was young. And I was like, I can probably do that again. So 2-3 years ago now.
What did you do like prior to starting? Were you like studying or
I did a lot of stuff. I did go to school from the age of 16 to 18. And I was double majoring in biochemistry and psychobiology for forensic science. And when I turned 18, I ended up having to move. So I was like, hey, I'm not going to do this. And I went back with my old acting and modeling agency. And then I ended up moving to Arizona and Colorado. And then COVID happened. So during COVID, I ended up, I started up my own business in cognitive behavioral canine training. So just working with a lot of dogs that had issues. And from that, I grew a pretty good network within LA, because that's when I first moved to LA. And I ended up meeting my good group of friends who are all on social media. And that's how I kind of integrated myself from dog training to social media.
Interesting. Did you finish that double major before and then?
No, I did, I believe, 6 semesters, maybe 5 semesters. 5.5. And the second I turned 18, I dropped out and didn't continue. I can always go back. I have my 4.0 standing grade. So I can always go back to it if I need to, but I definitely don't need to.
What made you want to go ahead and start that business of like training dogs?
Nothing specific. I got my dog and I trained him exceptionally well because he is technically a service dog for specific reasons. And through that, my friends are asking, oh my God, can you train my dog? And through their friends, like, yo, can your friend come train my dog? And then eventually I said, let's just monetize it. And so that's how that happened. And I love dogs and I love making money. And it all just worked out.
Were you like always like a go-getter, Rebecca, since you like moved to all these different places, you're trying a bunch of different things, the modeling, the acting classes, you did really well in school. Like, where do you think that all came from, you reckon?
I think I'm someone who's, one, super impulsive. 2, when I do something, I do it 110% or don't do it at all. And 3, I'm a perfectionist. And I think those 3 together create a recipe of having a lot of experiences, having a lot of hobbies, having a lot of interests, and doing them to the fullest and the best of my ability. So you could say I'm a go-getter, but it's just more of like how my brain has been wired growing up and conditioned and just how it works now.
Super difficult. How did you transition from doing like the dog training into like social media? Was that like a slow transition? Were you doing both for like a 6-month period or did you jump right over?
Surprisingly not. The only reason I could do it was because my friend, my best friend at the time, he started an OnlyFans. I was like, oh, what's that? And I saw him making like 5-6 grand a month off of it. And I was like, oh, like that seems like easy money just for like extra content. And I was nobody at the time on social media. It didn't really matter. So I was like, oh, I'll post there. So I started posting there and I started making like 6, 7 to 8 grand a month. And at first it was like rated PG-13 stuff. it was nothing bad. And that kind of just carried my over from dog training to OnlyFans / social media. And then all my clients from dog training, I handed over to my employees. They were my employees. I just don't like to call my employees because I viewed them as like not significance, but peers.
Do you still have the dog training running on the side now?
No, I passed that. I just couldn't. Those are two different categories to have going on in my brain.
How did you go from like zero to like 5 to 6K a month on OnlyFans? Like, did
TikTok.
You... And then how many followers did you have on TikTok to like convert that much?
Beginning 4 months, I went from zero to 400,000 followers.
Whoa.
And fourth month, I think I was making like 20K.
Wow.
And that's gross. So take out 20% from OF that they take. In that tax bracket, I think you're getting taxed like 30 or 28%. So take out that. And then if you're paying someone to like help out and like schedule content and do this and that, then they're also getting a percentage. So it's honestly not as much as you think. 20K sounds like a lot when realistically it's like 12, 8, if anything.
How'd you go from like zero to 400K in like 4 months on TikTok? And is that still doable now?
Now for anybody?
Hmm.
Absolutely. I think because if you're a first time Instagram social media person and you create content that's short and relatable, people will automatically be into it. And the second that people are into it and they're following you and you continuously make little longer videos, a little more personalized videos, that really sticks and people start to stick to your personality and your channel for you rather than just the short relatable content. I still do a mixture of both because I think on TikTok I'm considered big, but on the other social medias it's just like I'm not. And I think it's more for fun than like, oh, I gotta post something relatable, or I gotta post something that's like about me and personal and deep and yada yada yada. But anyone who first starts out, that's what I would suggest. And anyone is in any category of cooking, fishing, you're making your own garden, like you can do it no matter what. You just have to hit the right demographic and the right algorithm at the right time.
When you sort of reach, let's say there's like a slower month where you're just reaching less people on social, does that also affect your OnlyFans, or are they quite not linked?
When I say that one more time, I blanked out.
I guess on months where you're getting less views on TikTok, social media, do subscribers drop off on OnlyFans, or is it not that correlated?
Yes and no. I think people who follow my OnlyFans, anyone who follows an OnlyFans will already have that stigma of, oh, this is an OnlyFans, this is for that adult kind of content. I strictly stop that, and it's, if anything, more PG than anything. Sometimes it's PG-13, but like it's anything that I'd post on Instagram, except no one gets to see it in public eye. They only get to see it here. And OnlyFans is specifically for me to engage with my followers that I actually really like. So anyone I talk to on my OF, I talk to them in a girl next door kind of way, and I get to know them and we have regular conversations and we have interesting conversations, and that's what keeps the followers around. Anyone who's there for just pictures or whatever, you know, they kind of dip out and it's like, okay, I didn't really target your kind of demographics. This is fine. So when it comes to like engagement and subscribers, I don't necessarily look at that. I look at more of who are the real ones who are sticking and staying? Who are these new incomers? Who are these newcomers?
I had a friend and she was telling me how she's on OnlyFans as well, and she like has a small account, and like guys would like buy her stuff and they'd want her to like send photos of her wearing the stuff they bought her. Is that a common thing for you, or like what are your sort of like, what are some interesting unique things that interactions you've had?
Things. When I get those first newcomers and they come for the OnlyFans account, I've had people ask me to smash food between my foot in the ground, like with heels or barefoot or in a plastic bag. I've had someone ask for my pillowcase. I've had someone ask for like fecal matter content. I don't even know. Whatever these people are into, I've had them ask, and I kind of just ignore it. I don't do customs at all, like at all. I make that pretty clear. If you want, even if it's just like a picnic, I don't do customs. It's just too much that'd be way too much for me to handle to do everyone's, because I have two accounts. I have a free and then I have a VIP. So collectively, there's like 50,000 people on there. And for me to engage with that already is a lot. So for me to do a personalized thing for 50,000 people would be way too much on top of my other seven platforms and my other projects in life.
How do you balance like all the seven different platforms? Do you create like specific content for each social media platform or do you repurpose?
Both. I'll repurpose all my TikToks to my second TikTok account and my Instagram. And then my Instagram also gets pictures, and my Instagram also has a subscription option, which is basically like my row of pictures just on there, but it's way cheaper. And it's more of, if anything, my Instagram subscription is my Instagram as if I wasn't an influencer. It's like a normal human's Instagram. As for YouTube, I do long form specifically just for YouTube. And then I also transfer my TikTok short form over to my YouTube. I also do long form for OFTV. And then Snapchat's literally sporadic. Threads is literally sporadic. For my dog's account, which I don't make any money off of it. I just like to post him, and I like to post, which just sounds silly, ASMR videos of him eating. So I post that stuff, and I'll make that for his account. And I just kind of go from there on whatever outfits, opportunities, settings, like if I ever get an Airbnb, just like whatever's coming up in the future, I'll like, okay, this is what I'll plan to wear, what to shoot, these videos, and when I'll post them.
That's like so much. Do you do it all yourself, Rebecca, or do you have like some people help you out?
Yeah, no, I think when you're really surrounded by a community of people who do it, you'd realize that's a very normal thing to do. Like, this is just a normal way of things. I would consider myself to be a less of a busy bee in social media than some of my friends. Like my friend Niall Niga, he goes crazy with content. He hires videographers. He has a whole team of editors. He has his po he had, I think, two podcasts, a YouTube channel, Snapchat subscription. Like, he has this whole thing. And I think that he full sends content every day, super methodical, planned out. Whereas mine's like, well, I got this coming up. I can do this, 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 and this. Okay, sick. Let's do that.
Do you schedule out everything in advance, or are you sort of every day is sort of doing it live?
I schedule pretty much everything. My calendar looks like a color-coded neat freak. I'm a bit of an OCD person when it comes to organization. But when it comes to, no, I'm gonna say I schedule everything.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, like, actually, so do you batch take photos and film content on like a certain day and then you schedule it out for the next 7 days? What's your sort of flow like?
I will take TikToks once to twice a week. I'll have them those filmed. I like to do twice because I like to have different outfits on, and also depending on which setting I need it to be in. And then I'll post those on all three platforms throughout the week. Instagram, it's usually a daily thing where I'll take pictures at the gym. And if I like them, I'll post them. If I dislike them, they'll go to OF or they'll go to IG subscription. YouTube, that's honestly the hardest one. Long form is the absolute hardest because it's a lot more planning. It's a lot more visually thinking, okay, this is what I want the scene to connect to. This is the scene after, yada, yada, yada. A lot of editing. And I like to say I post weekly because I used to, but when I posted weekly, I posted these stupid videos that I don't think would be good memories to look back on. Like, oh, that was fun, yada, yada, yada. The reason I started YouTube was because YouTube is where I love rewatching all my memories in life, and that's all I'm gonna have on my deathbed. So I wanna make sure it's always something that is gonna be a good memory and that people can enjoy with me. And it's usually like this last Christmas, I puppy sat. And then for my birthday, my boyfriend had surprises for me. It's like usually like personal experiences. So that one's a little more difficult to plan.
How do you go about like setting time aside to edit those longer project videos for like YouTube for that like Christmas example? Yeah, because like you're constantly day to day trying to just get the next piece of content out. I think you do schedule it in advance, so I guess that does free up your time. But how do you force yourself? Do you have like a schedule where, like I need to put out one YouTube video a month and
Not for YouTube. If I have a video, I'll post it and I'll film it. If I don't, I'm not gonna try because it's just gonna be super forced and it's gonna suck all the fun out. Editing, well, I'll say it takes an hour per minute of footage that is final post for me to edit. So I'll take maybe 3 4 days and edit a 12 15 minute video, usually like after the gym or something. So I go to the gym, my body's winding down, I'll just do it, bang it out, and then do whatever else. And then I'll do social clips for another like hour, an hour and a half, which is just smaller short clips of the long form content that I get to post on social media and be like, this is the highlight of it all.
With your like short form content, do you post like one a day on TikTok and then?
Yeah, I used to post 3 times a day on TikTok. I don't know how I did that. Yeah, but now it's one time.
And then the one time a day videos, what type of videos do you usually do? Is it like talking videos? Is it sort of day in a life? Is it montages synced to like popular songs that are trending?
What platform did you find me on?
Instagram.
Instagram. Okay. Was it through a reel or a picture?
I think it was through either Explore, and I think maybe it was either like a picture, probably a picture,
Picture?
yeah.
Okay. Well, all my reels, I think, are what people follow me for. My reels, TikTok, shorts, whatever. And it's all similarly short, fast, relatable, funny videos. And since my Instagram, all I really do is go to the gym. So like it appears to be a fitness page. I also do a lot of content in the fitness realm that's like more comedy or relatable or just funny rather than get ready with me or dye my hair with me or talkovers or anything. So it's all pretty fast, just funny audios that I use.
Yeah, now it's sort of coming back to me. Like I remember the videos with your boyfriend or video of like if you're like going to a gym for the first time overseas and I don't know, you're eyeing out who's there. I don't know, I'm just
Yeah,
yeah, those
I know.
videos are popping up. Do you edit them all on your laptop on like Final Cut Pro or do you just edit it through the TikTok app?
TikTok and CapCut. I'll
Yeah.
edit short form. For long form and some TikToks, I absolutely will edit in Adobe Premiere.
Oh. And then you just edit on CapCut on your phone as well. What do you?
Yeah, for super fast things that I just need to chop up. I like using CapCut because it is pretty simple, but when I do longer high resolution things, it takes a lifetime and a half to export.
Do you have like sort of follower count goals or monthly reach goals? Or do you just sort of stick to, okay, I'm just gonna post one a day and whatever happens, happens? Or do you make pivots when things go down?
When things go down engagement wise, that's kind of everyone's social media life. Your life will go up, your life will go down. If you blow up, like if you're a significant influencer all of a sudden, you will crash very hard. If you blow up a little bit, you crash very little, and then it's more of this. So I would say on my TikTok, I blew up, and now for the last year, it's just been stagnant. On Instagram, it's just slowly going up and stagnant and going up and stagnant. I don't really care too much about that. I think I used to because I was like, oh, this defines my success. But right now I'm working on 2 major projects that they're in the film industry and they're not in social media world. So to me, that's a way bigger picture and a way bigger goal that even in my head, I dislike. I don't want to dislike, but whenever I see an influencer acting in an actual film or a theatrical part, I have a little less respect. Because it's more of a connection for them, a networking thing than acting. And though they might be good actors, it's just this automatic thing I get in my head. And I honestly wish that didn't wasn't there because I myself have been acting my entire life. And I see it as if you have a big following and you start acting, it's like, oh yeah, you know, the network thing. So I rather keep my following at where it's at for when my projects release. And because these projects are something that I've written, one of them I wrote and the other one I helped. I think it puts more respect behind it. And I'm also acting in it. Yeah, I just don't really care about that stuff anymore, at least.
That's so cool. And are these projects like short films? Are they gonna go to, are you gonna try pitch it to like a network? What's the plan for these two projects?
One got picked up by a big network.
Nice.
The other one is in pitch deck form. So that one hasn't been finalized and it's not in pre-production or anything. I can't say it's not short form or short films. That tells you how much I say the word short form. It's not short films. Yeah, I can't really say.
But that's so cool. You're like so savvy. You've been able to like get it picked up by like a big network. Like, how did you go about figuring out how to shop around the story and put together pitch deck and who to go to like, how did you figure that all out, Rebecca?
That's a lot of my friends. I've been in the film industry my entire life. I'll take that back. I was in the film industry when I was a youngin', a toddler. And then I went back into the film industry when I turned 18. And I just modeled at the time too. And then between that, I did Olympic sports and yada, yada, yada. So I've been in the industry. I have a lot of networks within it. And then out here in LA, you really do get much, I won't say that, a lot more networks. And I met with my old hometown friend who has a lot of, he's like in the industry. He has a lot of networks himself. And it's their project that got picked up because their project is more of a low production project, whereas my project is a massive high production world building. We probably have to film out of the country project. So ours has been taking a lot longer to write. Theirs got picked up. Let's see here. Not too long ago, through their network, it's really just all networking out here. And I think my friend, hometown friend, he's the one who taught me how to script write properly. He's the one who taught me like the different arcs, arcs, phases. I don't know. Clearly, I learned a lot. No, he taught me basically everything I needed to know to be able to write this because I have the idea and I have the scene and I have the frame by frame. But he helped me put it onto paper and he's helping me create that pitch deck. And then through my networks, I'm trying to get it past the pitch room and just right into production. And then if not, we'll just do a pitch room and deal with it the normal way.
That's beautiful. So the first
Yeah,
project that
very.
got picked up by the big network, like what's the next steps? Like how do you figure out, like do you need to hire like a director? Like do you hire someone to like do casting, or are you gonna do a lot of it yourself?
The network will take care of that. Once they sell anything to any network, the network is it's all in their hands. You have no control, which is honestly a downside because sometimes they'll change the script and such. That is more their project, so I'm not too sure and too invested in how much is going into it. I just know they want me to be casted in it as well. Yeah, that's all up to the network. I wish it was up to us. If anything, though, I feel like it stressed me out. So maybe not. Maybe I'll just sit back and watch them.
Do you enjoy writing? Do you think that's something that you see yourself doing long term?
I think I've always liked to write because I like to see what I can create. I think I have a little bit of a crazy, fucked up mind to the point where it keeps things interesting. Yeah, I can see myself doing it for fun. I don't think I'll ever be doing the same thing ever for the rest of my life. So I could see this as a side hobby slash main hobby. In the end, I really want an animal farm somewhere off in a different country, self-sustaining. But this is a great thing for me to do now.
Yeah, it's always nice to have. Like, I remember I was at the bottom of Australia, there's this island called Tasmania, and like, there's like just so much farmland. And like, I was staying at this Airbnb, I was like, man, like, I could retire and just like raise a family on a farm. Like, it's so relaxing. Yeah, like, there's this like, there's no weight on your shoulders, and there's something about just being in nature, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, just gotta clean up poop and that's it.
Yeah.
Take care of the vet bills.
How has like, do you think being in like the social media space, being in LA, being like a public facing person, like how does that like affect people mentally? Like what is it like? Like, you know, you hear stories of people going crazy, or like people go up and it's like you reach such amount of success in short time and you just expect constant success because that's what happened prior. And when that doesn't happen, you sort of feel really down. How's like your like journey been like?
It's the same as pretty much everyone else. The ups and downs really do get to you. I think the biggest thing for people and the biggest thing for me was the comments. And so now I have officially stopped reading any and all comments unless they're my friends. So no comments for me because I will get into my head. And it's all these people who are projecting and filling in the blanks with their own experiences or their own knowledge of stereotypes. So I stopped doing the comments. I also think I've gone through a ridiculous amount of things in my life. In my past, that have made me so headstrong that I don't necessarily take too much into that mental aspect. Like, one thing for me would be a whole world for someone else. Whereas I think it's hard to explain because there's so much that has happened and it's like not a short story. Now I've just blocked everything out. I just post, I post for me, I post for my laughs. I don't look at anything else. And that has been the easiest go right for me. The only thing I could say that gets me down is being around a lot of not fake people, but people who put on facades. I think that's the only thing that gets me down because I really do cherish genuine relationships and dynamics.
Given that you know you probably have that that sense in a real sensorial. Is it easy to like sense if someone's like putting on a facade in LA, or if someone has an agenda, or if they're like just hanging out with you for a reason? Is that something you can easily sense, or do you still sometimes get blindsided?
No, you can easily sense it. It's not just LA. I would say LA is just a hot spot for it. It's pretty much everywhere. You can pick up on energies at any time. And some people are super genuine with you. And they ask maybe one question, like, hey, let's post a story, or hey, let's do that. And then you get that, you can feel that energy, you can feel their nervousness in asking that. You get that, but you still understand that they're still genuine people. They just want that, versus people who straight up come up to you for, hey, let's collab. Oh, I know a guy who can help you out. Oh, like, I have a person, would you be able to connect me? And like things like that. I think it's the people who put on facades for themselves, people who don't really stay true to who they are, and they become their internet personality. Or what's another example? I'm trying to say things that's like not calling people out. I just think people get lost in the internet and believe that they are what people, like viewers, see them as versus who they actually are. And that is something that brings me down, because I'm like, damn, like, these people are lost. And I also have a very big issue with hanging out with people that I don't think are valuable, not valuable, but like genuine people to my life, if that makes sense. You become the people you hang out around the most. And I want to hang out with people who are genuine, who are to themselves, who are goal getters, yada, yada, yada.
Do you have like a mentor or manager that you sort of get advice from? Like, when you're approached by all these different people, like wanting something, are there people that you sort of talk to, or are you quite independent and you sort of like, you just sort of like know what to say no to and what to say yes to?
I'm pretty independent when it comes to that stuff. I say no more than I should, but it's not necessary. And I think it'd take time and energy and thinking space in my head away from the projects or anything else. Yeah. I'll talk to Larry, my boyfriend, about it, and he'll help me out too. But I think I'm pretty good at balancing stuff like that.
That's super cool. Do you have any sort of creators that you sort of consume, or any content that you sort of like are a fan of?
Everyone asks me this. No, not really. Because there's so many categories out there. A lot of personalities. People ask me if I look up to anyone, and I can't think of one person. I'm like, yeah, I look up to this person. This person inspires me. Yeah, I think I just inspire myself to do better than what I did before, the day before.
Where do you think this sort of all came from? Like, Rebecca, like, do you read a lot? Where do you think this sort of mindset of really working on yourself, being like an amazing, unique individual, and sort of knowing that's the best thing you can do? Where do you think all that sort of came from?
I think growing up in the modeling industry, and then getting into the acting industry, and then getting into Olympic sports, which is gymnastics and the Olympic weightlifting, those are single player sports. You're against everyone. You're not a team. You're against everyone. In modeling, you're constantly being criticized. You're constantly being photoshopped. And acting, you constantly have to be critiqued as well. And I think because of that, I developed a sense of perfectionism, and I've always just wanted to be pretty well-rounded as a human being, so that those three things, not three or four, I don't know, all those together, I think I've just developed this being of, let's do it all, let's do it perfect.
That's awesome. During that like phase of like doing acting, modeling, Olympics, were you still sort of staying with your sort of adopted parents, and were they sort of supporting you throughout that process? And yeah, what was that like?
My mom was the one who got all three of us kids into acting. And she unfortunately had a lot of mental disabilities that we weren't aware of until we were older. So it actually became very difficult for us as kids. And then on top of that, her disabilities also got passed down to my older, the middle child. So it became really difficult with family, just because all of our dynamics are really askewed. They were there to support, but I wouldn't say they were the most supportive. Or usually a parent goes to their child's soccer game or the child's gymnastics meet. My parents, if it's too far, they wouldn't do it. With acting, it was very pressured. With Olympic weightlifting or gymnastics, it was a lot of comparison. It was a lot of like, you need to do better. And it's like, okay, you want me to do better because you want me to to just do well in life and you want me to accomplish things, that's great. But the way it came off was just really harsh. And I think they were supportive. It just came off in a demeaning way.
Are you the youngest out of all your siblings, and were you the only adopted one?
The three that I grew up with, my two older brothers were biological to my parents. I was the youngest adopted. And then when I turned 12, I lied. We adopted another little girl from Africa, but I moved out when I was 16. So it wasn't I had a younger sibling kind of thing. It was like, oh, okay, there's someone up here and then I'm gone.
What do you think your mom or dad, what made them want to sort of adopt kids like you and then the younger child? Is it something they've always wanted? Did they just want to have more kids? Because they had the ability to have children, I guess.
Yeah, my mom wanted two biological, two adopted, two boys and two girls.
Oh.
And we also had seven foster kids in the house. Not all at once. They just like came through the house. So my mom was really good with kids, but unfortunately she's horrible with teenagers. Like it's very, very bad.
Yeah, I'm just like thinking of this. I recently watched this movie. I think it was by Mark Wahlberg. It was like about foster parents, and I'm just like thinking of that and just watching that. That sort of opened my eyes to what it was like in that whole world of like being in like a foster situation and then parents coming, you know, picking kids, trying to like match them. And like if it's a teenager, it's like much more difficult, and bouncing homes. It's like, wow, such a tough upbringing.
Very. Luckily, I didn't have to go through foster care, but being a newborn, you kind of get snatched up pretty quickly. But it was really tough to see a lot of the kids go through it, because I don't know about a lot of them today. I only know about two of them. They're not doing that well, like mentally. Like they have a lot to work on still. And it's hard because a lot of times too, when you're a foster kid, you're not encouraged to go get help. But when you are, it seems condescending or anything. And I strongly believe in therapy. I've gone through a wilderness therapy program when I was a teenager. I've been to lots of therapists, psychiatrists. Whenever I move any place, I always go to like 1 year so I can like work in person. I think it's beneficial for anyone and everyone. So I think it's sad that it's looked down on by these kids that just got a shitty cards. Like shitty hand.
Is a sort of therapist something that you go to still nowadays, like every week? And sort of how has it helped you if you still do it?
I don't. I should. People ask me all the time too, because they're like, Rebecca, you make so much money, yada yada yada. I'm like, I make money, but I also save a lot of money, which is why I have a lot of money. I'm a cheap fuck when it comes down to it.
How do you sort of, in what circumstances do you go ahead and invest into a therapist, since you've done that in the past? So that's like pretty good, like with that mindset. Like I love saving money as well. And like when I invest into something, it's sort of, I sort of have to need it. Yeah. In what circumstances, or how do you know that, hey, like I need to sort of chat with someone for the next 6 months?
Yeah, I personally, I might need it again in the future. I think I'm very well in tune with myself, as well as the rest of the world, and understanding how traumas really do affect people and how people react and why people have the intentions of saying what they say and what they do. I think I have a very clear understanding of that to dissect and work my own therapy within myself. The only reason I say that is because you heard of wilderness therapy programs for adolescents? Okay. In the United States, specifically Utah, there are a lot of programs where people will come in the middle of the night and kidnap you, put you on a plane, take you out to what's called a base, strip you down, squat and cough, pack you up, put a bag over your head, and take you out to a wilderness, random, like you don't know where in the desert. And then you live out there with, say, 10 to 13 other girls, where you constantly do therapy. When I say constantly, you're doing it all day. You're doing it lucid dreaming through the night. You're journaling about the lucid dreaming in the morning. You are working in I statements. So basically statements that are super structured, of being able to tell your feelings of how you feel in first emotions rather than secondary. When you feel it, like what is inside your control? What is inside outside control? Like so much therapy. You learn how to give feedback to people. You learn how to take feedback. Like it's so much. And then from there, usually you're in there for 6 weeks. I got sent in, and the therapist doesn't really let you go until they think you're ready. I got sent in and I didn't get to come out until 22 weeks later. You don't get a shower, by the way, and you eat the same food every single day. So I gained a lot of weight. And I was like, why was I in there for so long? And I come to find out, at like the 7 week mark, my mom was trying to sue the company that took me for kidnapping me, because she was very against doing therapy as well. And that was the whole point, is that you do therapy, the parents do therapy, you guys all work together. We found out she got diagnosed with narcissism later, as well as border personality disorder, bipolar, and schizophrenia. So like, okay, now it kind of makes sense why she has all this going on. You go to an aftercare after Wilderness, which is usually a year or two. And this aftercare is basically a program that's supposed to transition you back from Wilderness into society, because it's a very hard transition for a lot of kids. There's a lot of structure, and then you go to no structure. I was there for 2 or 4 months, I forget, not long. And I remember getting a call and they said, Rebecca, you're leaving. And I was like, I've only been here for 4 months. I'm supposed to be here for like a year or two. What are you talking about? And they're like, well, your mom's trying to sue us. And I'm like, ah. So she's trying to sue that company as well. But through all that, I think all that therapy for a year and 8 months, a year and 2 months, a year and 4 months, I don't even know, a year, I forget. I learned so much about myself and how the world works, how people work. I just am able to understand situations when I'm going through a hard time. And even myself, because I go into, the reason I have a service dog is because I go into like manic episodes, basically. I don't do it anymore, but it's labeled as PTSD. And it's when you've experienced near death or have witnessed near death. And I guess as my childhood, I had experienced a lot of experiences enough to put me on the scale that I have PTSD. So I would go into manic episodes, and my dog basically did psychiatric tasks for me. And it gets me to a point where I can clearly dissect what's going on, what I need to do, and yada, yada, yada. So when it gets really bad, I'm able to calm myself down and figure it out.
That's so cool. And that's so brave. How old were you when you sort of went through the sort of wilderness camp, therapy camp? And like, how does that, who sets that up? And who, like, do you know you're getting kidnapped? Do you know, did you sign up for it?
No, I was 14. It was November 20 something. It was 2:32 a.m. These two girls came in. They don't tell you where you're going. Even when you're out there, you're supposed to be in the moment constantly. So they will never tell you where we're going, like where we're hiking to, or what we're about to do, or anything. You have to always be in the moment. It's called Evoke, the company, and it's a branch off of a company called Second Nature. And those are, Second Nature was one of the biggest, and I believe now sued and shut down, company to run adolescent therapy as well as adult. But not many people put themselves through that and Utah's a hot spot for therapy programs like that. So I got woken up. It was the night of school, so I had school the next morning. They came into the bathroom while I went to the bathroom, weirded out. They held my arms as I went to the car. Super weird. The car was like child locked. Like when I got in, like the first thing I noticed was like, this car is definitely like a child locked car. They put me on a plane with just one of the caretakers, or we call them gooners. We landed in a Vegas airport. And the only way I could tell is because I was looking at the signs and there were slot machines everywhere. And they handed me off to two other transporters, a guy and a girl, where we drove hours and hours and hours, and we came to base. And that's when they're like, okay, we're in St. George, Utah. I was like, we were just in Nevada. Like now we're in Utah. Okay. And then they did the whole strip down gear up thing, and they took me out, and they wouldn't tell me where I'm going. They like had me like back over the head basically. And it was dusk practically. So all I saw was 13 silhouettes of other girls in the same outfit. And when you go in, you're considered earth based. So you can't talk to anybody and no one will talk to you for 3 days. You're just supposed to observe, figure out what's going on. And I remember the morning after, I just woke up and I was like, you wake up thinking you're in your bed. And when you wake up and you're under a tarp in a sleeping bag, it's not a great feeling. So I don't know, I remember what your question was, but that's who kind of runs it.
How do they, like, who signed you up for?
My mom, yeah. And she took all my money from acting and modeling and put it all into that. So when I came back, all my savings were gone.
So she put you into it, but then she also sued them.
Uh-huh. Whack, right? I'm telling you, she has a lot of traumas from her past she needs to cope with. She's got a lot of issues, and I unfortunately had to take a bearing of those.
Was she always planning to sue the company when sending you to it, or did she find out after the fact that this was quite crazy? I didn't know I signed my daughter up for this. Let's sue them.
No, it was a thing where she also had to do therapy sessions with the same therapist I was doing it with, so that we could start doing therapy sessions together. And she was very against the idea that anything was wrong with her. That's what the therapist says, and my dad also vouched for. She's so against it, saying that it's not her fault. It's that the kid, me, the adolescent needs to fix my whatever, whatever. And mind you, I never did drugs. I was a virgin. I had never snuck out. I had straight A's. So I was a good kid. And whenever I went out, I'd like tell them who, what, when, where, why, and transportation on a piece of paper. Cause I was forced to, like I had to, I was a good kid. So for her to be saying this, it just makes sense. I'm like, okay, like, it's got, our relationship has gotten to a point where she can't have me in the house. And now that she has me out of the house, she's suing the people who are telling her that she also needs to work on herself if we're going to make our relationship work. That makes sense.
Do you think, like, when you were younger, before you sort of became a teen, did you sort of feel loved by your mom, or was it always this dynamic?
No, when I was younger, like I said, she's really good with kids, just teenagers. No. Yeah.
When you were, like, kidnapped by the wilderness therapy, like, at what point did you know that this was therapy and you weren't actually getting kidnapped?
When I sat down with the therapist and the first question he asked me, this is I think the day after I arrived into the wilderness, they said, okay, Becca, you're gonna go over here with Paul. Paul was my therapist. He's like, okay, Becca, have you ever done therapy? And that was my, like, signifying this is therapy. And I said no. Like, he said, that's very interesting because usually parents try therapy for the kids before sending them out into the middle of the wilderness. I'm like, interesting. So that was my cue. Oh, okay, I see. And I really did find out a lot about myself. And I had, besides PTSD, I had three other diagnoses that I wasn't aware of. And I don't like to identify or live by my diagnosis, but I think it made me understand why I am the way I am, which also helps me dissect when I am having any breakdowns or depression or upsetness. This helps me dissect, like, oh, that's probably this triggering, and I just need to work through it, like, you know. So it was really, really helpful.
Like, given that you didn't know you were, like, in therapy until you sat down with the therapist, like, would you be yelling at the airport saying, hey, I'm getting kidnapped?
No, only my parents did, my dad specifically, he did like give me a head nod when I walked out the front door, and I like looked back to see my dad, like looked back and like waved and like gave me a head nod, and I was like, oh, okay. The biggest thing I was concerned about, I had a perfect attendance at school, and I was like, if I miss school, I'm missing my assignments, I'm gonna get bad grades, yada yada yada. So I was like, but if I'm getting kidnapped and they can't give me bad grades. And that semester, they ended up just giving me all A's for the entire semester because of the situation.
Given that, like, the wilderness therapy is, like, now, like, shut down, do you think it's, like, a good thing? Like, was it, like, did it help a lot of people? Do you think they should reopen it? Or do you think it's a good thing that's, like, shut down?
No. The girls who are in that therapy program, they have issues. Like, they have actual horrible dealt hands in life, and they developed issues from it, and because of that, it absolutely helped them figure out who they were, but they relapsed from those issues. I relapsed from my own issues. It doesn't necessarily help anything of that sort. And the reason it got sued is because it was practically inhumane to do. We had to defecate and urinate in buckets. We didn't have showers. We ate the same exact food. It was all carbs because we're in the middle of the desert. It wanted fat on us to keep us warm. And it was all carbs to the point where I was from 115 to 120 pounds to 160 pounds out there. And then it was just like super, it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong to do to a human being, because your parents, they can't control the kid, but they can't control their environment, which absolutely sucks. So I don't think they should start anything like that up again. I think there's 100% other ways where they can pick and choose from those experiences what to use, but nothing of that again.
That's crazy. How about, like, nowadays, Rebecca, when you sort of wake up and, you know, you're feeling maybe just down or less motivated because yesterday or the last few days you've been working a lot, what do you usually do on days where you just wake up and you're just not feeling it?
Usually eat a lot of food, and then I watch some TV. Yeah, I kind of take a lot of lazy days, because if I don't, it's gonna ruin more.
And I guess you have everything scheduled out, so like when those lazy days sort of happens, you're still posting.
Yeah, I post every day, and more because I find a dopamine rush out of it. I do, like, chemically in my brain, I enjoy doing this. I've never felt like, ugh, I need to post. you know.
What's the like psychology, or what is it like when you're on OnlyFans and you have like a ton of guys just messaging you for your attention, looking up to you, putting you on a pedestal? Like, does that affect the psychology? And like, what happens with OnlyFans girls with their like mental health? Like, what does that dynamic lead to, you reckon?
I really don't think I've changed that much. I think beforehand, with any social media, I had the male gaze on me, I'll say. So it's just a broader picture, but everything had broadened. And on only like OF's such a small part of my life. It's my like main source of income, but it's such a small, like I focus so little there that I think if I were to make that my main priority, that I'd be a lot more conscious of how this is affect that's how affecting that is how it's affecting me. It's also girls. There's a lot of girls on OF that just like we chat and like talk and like girl chat and stuff. Because I post a lot of my workout videos on OnlyFans, and a lot of girls like to know what workout I'm doing to figure out. It's like a fitness app, but instead of a whole app they have to download, they're just using this platform instead. So I don't think I've gotten like an ego or anything from it. Yeah.
What does it take to like manage? Like, do you do it all yourself? Do you work with an agency? Do you have a friend that sort of helps you out with it?
I have a management company that helps me I guess strategize like when I should post, what I should post, keywords, yada yada yada. So a lot of times if it doesn't flow like something I would normally say, it's because I'm usually using a keyword that I've been suggested to give to encourage people to open this and open that. And then I'll use those same keywords so that when people are like, oh, I've opened this before, I want to do it again, that and that. So they help me with those kind of things, but just on OF.
What are some keywords that people can use, or yeah, what are some keywords that would encourage people to buy like a photo pack? Yeah.
Keywords. I've noticed whenever I lean, like if I'm leaning out, I'll like, okay, physique update. I feel more lean today. My body fat percentage is yada yada yada. Dumpy. I use that on all my platforms because I don't like to say but. And when I say like cake or like whatever, because my big goal in life in the physique realm is to have an actual like shapelier derriere, dumpy. So I use that. People, of course, guys love that word. A lot of times, if I'm talking about hanging out with my animals, because I'll give my animals like hose baths and things like that. So if I say their names like Akamaru or Thorfinn, like animals are like, oh, that's so cute. Like they're invested in my life already, so they just want to see that. Cooking, I do a lot of cooking on my LF. So if I say cook with me, I think people are interested in that stuff.
Are these
These are the
keywords
main ones.
used just on your captions of your post, or is it used when you're talking to them one on one?
No, captions. One-on-one, I'm more just like a regular conversation. Because I want it to be genuine. Because if it's not genuine for me, then it's like, why am I even doing this?
Yeah, I'm trying to think like the friend I had, when she would talk to people one on one, it would be like the cues would be like, hey, like, I recently did this. Do you want to check out the next photo package? Like, she would sort of communicate in a way where it sort of led there, or like she would bring up the fact that, hey, like, this is a sort of photo package you can potentially purchase if you're interested. So it had
I
that
see.
sort of, it wasn't like a funnel. I guess it was like a chill conversation, but it did have that hint of like, hey, you can also check this out if you want.
Sometimes only I'll send out my packages, media kits, whatever, in a blast to everyone. And then anyone who responds like, oh, does it blank blank blank, or oh, like is it like unedited, like do, because sometimes when I have post really long form, I won't edit all the cuts out, so it's just like raw footage, and then it's like not as in like high speed and attention span favoritized. So like I'll reply to that, and that'll like help them. But I don't know. So I feel like funneling just so disingenuine. It just seems like such a money grab for me, you know?
I agree. Tell me about Instagram subscriptions. Like, I think like that's sort of newish. I haven't looked into it. Is it like big? Like, is it like a hidden sort of gem that people should look into, or is it pretty meh?
It's in between. I would say it's fun. It's an extra source of income. A lot of people use it as basically their Finsta. Like they post memes and like super just anything they want to post that they don't have to worry about looking bad on their actual feed. Like I said, I post like pictures of me and Larry, or like pictures of us going on vacation, or like videos of Akamaru, or like mirror selfies. I don't ever post, like, sometimes, but rarely, like mirror selfies or just regular selfies on my feed. I post like actual pictures on my actual feed and more personalized, if this was a normal person's Instagram, stuff on my subscription.
I just like realized when you said Akamaru, did you name it after the dog in Naruto?
Yeah.
Yes, I did. What do you think is like, is there any gaps in the social space? Like, if someone like had zero following, do you see any gaps or any sort of niches that haven't been filled that you'd recommend people to do, or that you'd personally do if you started all over?
No. I think if anything, the one thing I would recommend to someone is to avoid putting a persona on your social media, because you will be known for that persona and people will take you as that persona. Like, I have a few friends who have their handles as not their name, and that's what they're known as. They're known as like Fat Boy 101. I don't know an actual, but like that's their handle. That's what they're known for. And they're known for like this persona of yada, yada, yada. You really do want to condition your audience to who you are, so they're invested. Unless you want to keep up a persona for the rest of your life. But once you're known for something, that's not going to go away. Like, you're known for that for now, forever. That's my one piece of advice.
I realized like the OnlyFans friend I was talking to, I knew her in high school, and then her Instagram handle, she changed her last name. And then for some reason, I just thought that was her last name. But then a friend told me, was like, hey, dude, that's actually not her last name. So I totally forgot her real full name.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know that I forgot. I always thought it was just, that was her last name. And then I was like, oh yeah, you're right. Her sister does have a different last name. I totally forgot. Huh. Rebecca, is your last name Benedict? Like, is that your mom's last name, your dad's last name? Like,
that is my ex-husband's last name.
Oh.
I got married in 2019 because it was, another long story. It was a military marriage. He was supposed to get stationed out in Korea, and I don't do long distance. So I said, either I go with you or we break up, but I can't afford to go with you. I was 19. I can't afford to move everything to South Korea and everything, right? He's like, okay, well, if you get married to me, they'll pay for it and your education. You can like do school out there or anything. I'm like, okay, why not? We get married, and then he doesn't even need to go to South Korea anymore. So I'm like, huh. Well, now we're married. And then he got out of the military, and all that military structure he had in his life, we got stripped away, and I became an actual mother to this man. And no matter how many times it's like, oh, I'll work on it. Okay, he works on it. 2 weeks later, it's right back in the same cycle. I was like, okay, I can't. So we ended up splitting, like a regular breakup, but legally we had to get a divorce.
Huh, and you just kept his last name. And like, Benedict isn't a Korean name, is it?
Huh?
Benedict isn't like a Korean name, last name, is it?
No, he's from Alabama. He's a very German and Irish. He's a lot of Irish, I know that. Rebecca Benedict's like super, Rebecca Ann Benedict is my full name. Super, 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 super white, super whitewashed. My whole life is in white. My family's all white, besides my sister, my younger adopted sister's from Africa. She's black. Never have I gotten into the Asian community until this last year. And that's when I started dating an Asian guy, and like all my friends became Asian. Yada, yada, yada. Benedict is very white. It's like the Pope. It's actually the Pope's last name. So it's like, no, it's not Korean.
What was your last name prior to marrying your ex-husband?
Phillipson.
Oh, pretty white. The same, yeah. Rebecca Phillipson, Rebecca Benedict.
Yeah.
Have you ever had any like cravings to like search for your biological parents? Is that a thing?
I think that'd be really cool. I think it'd be a waste of time. Yeah. But if I ever did find them, that'd be pretty cool. I've just never... Yeah, I've never had that urge to be like, oh, I need to know who my bio parents are.
That's cool.
Not really going to affect my life in any way, like my future.
So this is something I heard where like love apparently isn't like the love a kid has for, like a mom has for their kid or a kid has for their parents. The guy was like, you know, love is not real. But what he was trying to say is love happens when you see something a lot of times. So the person you probably see most when you're sort of 18 is probably your parents. So you're going to love them the most. But eventually, once you get a partner and you spend 20 years with them, at the 20-year mark, you probably love them just as much as you love your parents. So it's like a volume thing. There isn't like an actual connection.
That's very interesting. I really like that.
What's your thoughts? Because I guess, yeah, because I couldn't answer the question because, you know, my mom is biological, so I can't say otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, like, what? does that apply to me?
I think, do you think that's like true? Do you think
I think that could be very true. Very, very true. And relevance in time. You also know that theory about how time, years get faster and faster as you age, because the ratio of time, it's like a year to 60 years is way smaller than a year to like a 10-year-old. So I think that also will have to apply to that theory as well. But I really do think that's true.
Let's say like you moved into a new house, you had a roommate, a girlfriend that was a bit of a narcissist. You didn't like her, but you guys were forced to stay together. So you guys made it work. Over 20 years, even though you guys aren't best friends or you guys are very different people, do you think you'd love that person as much as you love your mom?
I think there'd be an attachment. Love is a subcategory of attachment to me. Some kind of attachment. Yes.
How do you think you would want to raise, do you want kids? And if so, like, how do you think you'd want to raise them? Because that's something I think about, because I know that for me to get to where I am today, like an easy upbringing wouldn't have helped. Like I had to go through certain hardships and adversity, and like, I'd want to sort of give my kid a tough sort of upbringing, and I'd like maybe even just like create that circumstance for them.
I have never wanted kids, but I know I will change my mind in the future. So I'm not closed off to having kids. I'm just not ever planning on it. But if I were to have kids, because I think about this all the time, because I'm like, damn, like if I were to own a business here, if I were to have an island, like I just think about theories all the time. I would absolutely give tough love. It's so contextual though, because it really is how that kid is reacting in school and yada, 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 and like why they're reacting and how you need to react to create a positive or a mind-altering experience for them. And like, it's super contextual. That sounds super manipulative, but it's for their best interest. I'd be a pretty harsh mom. Like I'd let them eat dirt and stuff. But this isn't harsh. I'm not forcing them to eat dirt. I'm saying like dirt has antibiotics in it or whatever in it that doesn't really hurt them that much. And if anything, builds their immunity kind of thing. Like I'd rather them be an ugly kid and have a glow up and learn how to be humble and work for their things than have a peak in a high school kid and she has all the friends she wants and then does nothing else for the rest of her life kind of the kid.
Do you reckon you'd be like sending the kid to like private school, a bunch of extracurricular music, sports? Yeah.
Super contextual. So contextual. It really depends on the kid and what we're doing in life and where the economy is at. And like, because all you really want is for your kid to be happy and successful. Usually they go hand in hand. And that could success, like success for me at the end of my life looks like a giant animal farm, a giant self-sustaining animal farm. It doesn't sound super successful to everyone because there's like people who are like 30 and they have farms out in countrysides. But to me, that is. So as long as they're happy, successful, and healthy, that's all I really care about. That's so vague, I know.
How about like if a kid came home and she's like, hey, mom, like all my friends have iPhones. Can you buy me an iPhone?
I'd make them earn it. I had this theory too. This is going to sound really crazy. If I were to have kids, I would want to use the ideology of Santa as teaching them how to invest, saying like, okay, this year you can get this or you can do this. And next year you get twice over. And then the next year after that, you get three times over and yada, yada, yada. So I think I'd always make it a learning experience for my kids. So if they wanted an iPhone, I'd say, okay, for me, if I need to get an iPhone, I have to go pay for it. And I have to pay for a monthly bill and yada, yada, yada. So if you want an iPhone, I'll start giving you an allowance for doing tours around the house. And then you can pay for it. And of course I'll pay for it, but like a small denominator of it. And then pay a monthly bill for it as well. It's tough love, and that kid's going to complain to their friends, like, my mom makes me pay for it, yada, yada. But it's literally my own money I'm giving to that, you know. I'd make them learn.
Do you still sort of talk to your mom or dad or siblings today?
No. I moved out when I was 16 and don't really talk to... I haven't talked to my mom or my sister since I was 16. That was 8, 9 years ago. I'm 24, 8. And then my dad and my brother, my second oldest brother, he ended up committing suicide. Because he had a lot of those mental things he picked up from my mom. And then my eldest brother and my dad, we say hi to each other for holidays and birthdays, but it's completely out of obligation that we're family rather than people who share the same interests and like to enjoy each other's company.
That's crazy. Like I'm like fortunate. I still have, you know, my mom, my sisters, and I have like close friends, but you know, I still sort of go through periods where like, it's just like, you know, I wake up and, or like, I go to a party the night before, I see a bunch of friends, and I wake up the next morning, I'm home alone. I'm like, fuck, like I feel pretty lonely right now. Is that amplified? Is that feeling probably even worse for you because you don't have, you can't talk to your parents? Like I know my parents are there, but obviously I'm not gonna reach out, because if I tell my mom, hey, I'm feeling lonely, there's not much she can do to like help me out. I just need to sort of get some rest and like push through. How's that for you?
Yeah. So I got diagnosed with this other thing called RAD, which stands for reactive attachment disorder. And that's something that is commonly found in children. And basically, it's kids who have been through a system of foster care or adoptiveness or whatever and are passed from a nurturer to nurturer, whether that be a nanny, a nurse, an orphanage taker, foster parent. And they don't really attach to anyone, so they have a more difficult time to attach. So when they do, they like latch on and they stick on. And the second that's gone, it's like a manic episode. So I think because the lack of family, I found myself getting into long-term relationships, and I had 3 back-to-back, like actually no break between. And then for 2 years, I was like, no, I gotta grow from this. And so I like snapped out of it. I picked up some other unhealthy bad habits from it. Nothing like crazy unhealthy. It was just like mentally probably not the best thing. And then I found a really good friend group. And from that friend group, I found that source of attention and whatever, whatever. But I think when it comes down to being super lonely, it is more of a beating, especially for holidays. Like on Christmas, I usually spend it alone. My birthday, everyone's usually hungover on my birthday because it's January 1st. So I'm just kind of sitting there. And 4th of July is like an everyone's thing. Thanksgiving, you have Friendsgiving around the holiday, but usually on the holiday, I'm alone. That's why I got a dog.
Yeah, I think when you talked about the AFD, the attachment disorder, like I was thinking, I was like, huh, like I realized I don't know, out of like maybe self-defense, I don't attach myself onto people because, you know, every time I like, there's so many people I look up to and I've always been let down. And as a result, I sort of keep people close, but I have my hands out. There's like a bit of a gap. You know, I love my mom, but we're so different. So like, I can't talk to my mom every day, and I don't have like a best friend that I like chat to on like a daily basis, like someone that I'm just like splurging all the random thoughts I have. And then maybe that links up to something of like, yeah, because like when you have something to attach to, that sort of closes that lonely feeling, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You should learn something about yourself.
Anything that you've picked up that you've been implementing in your life over the last few months?
Yes. Absolutely. I have been on a rampage of knowing what is in our food and waters and beverages. I have been, so is my boyfriend and all of our friends. We have been deep researching, looking into everything that's sprayed, preservatives, chemicals, everything that's just injected into our food. And it's absolutely the worst. The U.S. is so bad with it, like absolutely poisoning us to get us to seek medical help, for us to pay big pharma, and it's a horrible vicious cycle. So I'm super on, and this goes right into my, having my own self-sustaining farm. I've been so on like not eating foods I normally eat. Red 40, which is honestly one of the most common things in U.S. food, it just doesn't need to be there. First of all, you can go to Mexico. We got Takis in Mexico. Was it Mexico? I forget. No, it was in Spain. We were in Spain, and it doesn't have red 40. All Red 40 does is just make it colorful. But Red 40 is one of the major things that creates ADHD-like behavior in kids. And it has a lot of heavy metals and it has so much stuff. So I've been like on it in my water in the last like year or so. Like, okay, water, all this water has atrazine in it. All this water has fluoride in it, whatever, whatever. Now it's like, okay, all this food has, I don't even know how to say some of these words. They're just straight up chemicals that don't need to be there. And I'm like, that's absolutely horrific. So I think that's one major thing in my life that I've been implementing. You're probably talking about business. I'm like, food.
No, that's exactly what I was thinking about. Do you drink bottled water? Do you have like one of those filters for tap water filters? Like, what's the solution to that? I've been like figuring out. I recently bought one of those things where you pour it in and it comes out, and just those pitchers. That's what you call it, those pitchers. And it says it like filters out fluoride and chlorine. The water tastes different. Yeah, but I don't know if I should invest into those actual like water changers.
If you actually want to invest into a water changer, you'd have to invest thousands of dollars into it, because it's something that you would want a plethora of, and it's going to be a giant tank and lots of pumps and valves sticking out of it. I have a water osmosis thing as well as water bottles, which is from Costco, which is Kirkland, and it absolutely has so much stuff in it that's not good for you, but it's way better than drinking the dirty tap metal filled harsh water in the tap.
What's your osmosis thing? And do you use that?
I just got it. I have been using it. It's basically a filter thing. It's like a coffee maker. You fill in the thing, it filters out. You can do hot and cold water. Yeah, it was actually a sponsor that I just got, so.
Very cool. And then how about foods? Like, have you been following like Gary Brecker and all the stuff he's been saying it?
Probably, I don't know names too well.
Have you done, he talks about like doing this methylated genetic tests where everyone has like different DNAs and most people can't process a certain chemical that's in a lot of foods, so you want to supplement it. Have you gone that deep?
Have I what? Have I gone that deep? I think I've gotten so deep to the point where it's overwhelming to comprehend everything and how to control it in my own life. So I think I've just really focused on, okay, this is that, that's that. Okay, whatever. This is me. This is what I'm gonna consume. This is like I'll watch like Larry's parents or whoever take all these medications and all these vitamins, not because they're sick or they need it, just because. And I'm like, you're adapting your body to something so horrible that probably even has even worse stuff in it that's going to create an issue. And when I watch friends eat horrible things, I'm like, it's hard for me not to be such a know-it-all and be like, you realize that's so bad for you. Like, yeah, it's like, it's going to cause so many issues in your future. So I learned to let it all go. Just like, okay, this is me. This is what I need to eat. This is what I need to stay away from.
So to like save me from doing the 60 hours worth of research and going that deep, what would your recommendation be? Like what's been the biggest takeaway that I would probably come to if I went through and did like a 60 hour deep dive?
The biggest takeaway is to grow your own food, have your own chickens. Chickens are really easy to take care of, and fresh eggs that don't have things injected in them. That's the biggest takeaway. And it's honestly a huge commitment because, I mean, not everyone gets the ability to have property or, like, live somewhere where they can do that. I think for your situation, avoid lab grown meat. I'm not sure if you have that in Australia or not, but it is everywhere here in the US. Avoid any lab grown meat. I think in Australia, I'll avoid any mosquitoes because they're carrying a lot of variants now that can cause a developing allergy in humans to red meats, which makes you, like, it literally forces you to eat lab grown meat, which is crazy because Bill Gates owns all the lab grown meat and a lot of the farmland, and he's the one who's releasing these mosquitoes. Anyways, avoid mosquitoes, avoid lab grown meat, avoid any and all food colorings, no food colorings, avoid any inflammatory oils like seed oils, or, I mean, not all of them are horrible, but most of them are pretty. I hate saying avoid, avoid, avoid.
Have you been able to like avoid all those things, or have you been slowly weaning out those things from your
I just
life?
avoid it. It's not even like I crave it. It's like now that I know what's inside of it, and now I know what, like, over time what it can do, especially sunscreen. Like, I don't want that. Like, I'm repulsed. Like, and maybe not in Australia, but if you look at the ingredients on a sunscreen bottle in the US, so bad, so bad. And you're absorbing that into your skin. These girls in, especially, I guess not Korea, but the US, skincare products, lotions, scented candles, those Febreze air freshener plugins, the spray bottles, perfume, cologne. This everything's poisoned. Like, everything to ex like certain extent is poison. It's horrible.
What? Because like in Australia, the sun is like really tough, like really harsh down here. Like when I went to Korea, Mongolia, Hong Kong, like I wore no sunscreen at all and I was fine. But I go out like to the beach and like if I don't put on sunscreen, I'm like burnt the next day and my skin's really dry. So I sort of need to use sunscreen. But I think I'll just take a look at the ingredients and make sure there isn't like any long things I don't understand.
If you don't understand it, like, look it up. I know it's such a pain, but if you get in the habit of looking those things up, you really won't regret it. If anything, look up one Google search, natural sunscreen, and it'll come up with some wacky plant or something that you can just buy on Amazon or anywhere, like a gift shop or something. And you'll see that it also has other medicinal purposes than just being sunscreen. Like, a lot of plants usually have lots of purposes for lots of different things. But I don't know how the Australia government is over there. I just feel like the US is the worst because that's the one I live in.
Last question I usually like to wrap up the podcast with is, what's your goal and focus for the next 6 months, Rebecca?
These two projects, basically mine specifically, but these two projects, I want to have past pre-production. I want to be filming by the fourth month, probably the third, but knowing the industry, it's going to be the fourth or fifth. That's like the biggest thing and the only thing I really care about in life right now.
That's cool. You're like really focused and locked in. Rebecca, where
Yeah.
can people find more about you and sort of get all your content?
Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, barely Snapchat, barely Threads. You can find stuff, content, daily updates, OF too. I've been on a few other podcasts as well that talk more into deep intellectual things rather than funny little videos on the internet. So you'll find those also on my profiles.
Beautiful. I'll link everything in the description below. Thank you so much for your time today, Rebecca. I loved our chat. You're so real, raw, and vulnerable. And man, like you've definitely been through such a long, interesting journey in life. So you're definitely like super brave and strong to sort of make it through to the other end. And yeah, I really enjoyed our time and chat today.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for having me.
Awesome, guys. If you guys made it this far into the episode, please let me know your thoughts. Hopefully, you guys got some value from this episode, and I'll see you guys next week with another episode. Peace.